said, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, Sandy Uvalde, and 19 children slaughtered, two adults. You know, when they talk about things, days that go down in infamy, this is one. But even more so when you find out there was almost 400 law enforcement people there, heavily armed. Sandy, did you see some of the shields and things that they, I mean, they looked like they were from Desert Storm. They were militarily dressed. They had all of these things. Unfortunately, and then did you see the video?
I couldn't believe it. I just don't understand what was going on in their heads. But you know, and then the coverage of afterwards paints them all as villains essentially,
and cowards.
But there weren't 400 people there who were cowards, so that isn't really what was going on. But I can't figure out what was going on. There was disorganization. There was maybe disarray. There was a lack of
organization
or process. Because, you know, there's one thing. I remember there was the episode with the one with the sheriff who hid and didn't go into the school. I can't remember.
Right. I remember that.
I can't remember which
one guy. One guy.
And I can understand that, you know, who knows? I don't know whether I am a hero or a coward myself in that same circumstance. But with 400 people there, there were not 400 cowards. So there was a lack of something that created this environment. And now they want to paint each of the individuals as being the fault of this, when obviously there was something much bigger than that.
Too many, just too many people.
Yeah.
Maybe 400.
Maybe when you have 400, each one of the 400 figures, the other guys will do it.
Well, that's my point. They had just too many people on the site. So they're in the way of one another, right? I mean, you can picture that.
Yeah.
400 law enforcement people on in one area, one small, grade school.
Well, and the fact is that with the kids with the phones in there, they knew what was going on. There was a single shooter in a single classroom, and people were getting shot.
They also had on the video conversations being had by the guys who were in the school. Well, there's shooting going on there. You think we need to go in now? Well, I mean, what kind of question is that? And then they had them with all of the heavy armament. All of them with the heavy armament that they had. They had the shields, the automatic weapons, and, you know, and they were as well armed as the people in Ukraine. And then you've got all of your armored vehicles and all of those things. And I'll tell you something. That was it. Too many different people, too many separate bodies, federal, state, local. And you can kind of, you know, see where people would say, well, I don't know who's in command or who's in charge. But wouldn't you think that somebody would then come in, Sandy, and say, listen, I'm the guy, we're in charge. I mean, isn't that the way that's supposed to work?
I don't know how it's supposed to work. All I know is that it's further proof that weapons don't avoid the calamitous outcome of this kind of a thing. There was just a shooting yesterday, and apparently there was an armed bystander who took the guy out, not before he killed a number of people. And so I suppose there will be those who are gun proponents who will point at this armed innocent who was able to kill the perpetrator, but there was a perpetrator who killed multiple people before that happened. And let's face it, crazy people with guns kill people. much more likely with much worse outcomes than crazy people without guns. And whatever people want to say about how it is that mental health is the culprit in this case, no, it's mental health is going to be a problem in every society. Always.
Right.
We can set up programs that will minimize it, but it will always be a problem, and it will always be a much bigger problem when people with mental health problems can have guns.
Let's go to Bill. Bill, good morning, Bill. How you doing?
Good morning, Earl. See, I really like where the direction you're going. I don't know why, but I'm getting a bad echo.
Do you have your speaker? Are you on your speaker?
Yeah, I'm on Bluetooth.
Yeah, that's why you're getting it. You have to get off Bluetooth.
Okay, let me just get off Bluetooth.
That's what's going on. But you know, Sandy, it still again is the fact that this guy, you know, came in with a gun, ammunition, hell bent on doing what he was doing, and the young man who killed him notwithstanding, I don't want that hero around
me.
Bill, go ahead.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Sandy is so right. The gun is the problem. If guns weren't there, we wouldn't have a problem. It's as simple as that. And now I'm facing that in my city. We have a guy right now, a common council, who voted to have.
So, Bill, you still have the Bluetooth is still engaged.
Well, it's in my vehicle then. I tell you what, I'll hang up. I'll call you later.
Yeah, call back. So really what Bill is going to be talking about, Sandy, is he's in Oconomowoc, and some lunatics have said they want to open carry in the libraries. And it became a debate and an argument.
Well, there's dangerous stuff in books.
And so somehow the lunatics won. Because now you can go into the libraries in Oconomowoc and carry your guns. And, let's do this. Let's go to the phone lines. And CJ, what's going on, man? What do you say?
Hi, Earl and Sandy. Thanks for taking my call. Sandy spoke of the, I guess that, I'm sorry, I'm getting a bad feedback too, maybe from Bill.
No,
the guy that was able to disarm, he was armed and he took down the perpetrator after killing somebody, but he ended it. And the fact that punishing legal gun holders is not. And to punish them.
Listen. CJ, are you on the speakerphone? Yeah, you got to be on the speakerphone.
Yes, but I have been.
Well, that's what I know, but that's the problem. You have to get off the speakerphone. Are you off the speakerphone?
Well, I've used it before.
I know. If you get off the speakerphone, it'll come through clear. Are you off the speakerphone?
Okay. Yes.
All right. So now, go ahead.
Well, Sandy spoke of the guy that he took down the perpetrator, and he was a legal gun holder. But I believe in that. Don't punish the legal gun holders. One thing I did want to discuss: the schools. They said harden the schools, but the Madison schools used to have police officers that created relationship with these kids. And he was there for safety, and it helped. There was a good relationship with the students and the police. And due to some of the things that happened in the past year or two, they took him out of the school. And I think that was a mistake.
Hey, CJ, let me say this. Earlier today, I was talking about in Texas – Now there's somebody who's come up with a safe place for the students to go. It is bulletproof. It's a room where if shooting starts, all the kids can run into this fortified building and lock the door, and no gunman can get in. I don't know how many tens of thousands of dollars this thing costs. It looks like a trailer. And they're saying, you talk about fortifying the schools. This is one of the kind of ideas that comes up with fortifying the schools.
Well, no, actually, I think, CJ, you were talking about having the police in sort of a social worker / security capacity in high schools and grade schools, building a relationship with kids as well as providing them with security. And then you said they'd pulled them out of Madison schools, and you thought that was a mistake. And I think what you're talking about is actually, in some respects, in agreement with the Black Lives Matter concept of trying to have a different relationship between the police and the people in society generally, by having a much closer relationship, something more like patrol officers used to have when they operated on foot. So you know what, we might be closer to agreement, CJ, on some of what you're talking about than some of the other times.
So CJ, hang on, because I want to talk about that, because I was in the schools when the police officers were there. And okay. And so I'll speak from experience, from what I saw with police officers in the schools. Hang on, 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. So, but in every wartime country, where hate, pain, and killing feast, where is our peace prayer? Our desperately needed prayer for peace. Touch the universe to the heaven's eye. Where is our love song? Our desperately needed song of love. Of hope and peace for you and me. For them and us.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And CJ is on the line. But CJ, I wanted to say to you and others who think that law enforcement officers in the schools is a good idea. I was in the schools when law enforcement officers were there in Milwaukee Public Schools. Armed, well-trained, a financial investment in each law enforcement officer. And you got them sitting up in a school waiting on something that may never come, a shooter. And if you look at all the different schools that are open on a daily basis, and then one, there's somebody who comes in and shoots up the school, I think it's asinine to talk about hardening the schools and having law enforcement in the schools. It's a waste of resources. And so I'm telling you what I saw firsthand. And every time I hear people who want to harden the schools and all those kinds of things, I realize that those are people who just have not thought it through. Go ahead.
I think there's a way to have one entrance and have it secured. You don't have to spend, hundreds of thousands of dollars, but
what do you think it costs to have a law enforcement officer sitting in a school 5 days a week, 7-8 hours a day. How many hundreds of thousands of dollars do you think that one law enforcement officer costs?
You think it's hundreds of thousands of dollars, Earl?
How much, if he's there for the entire school year, I'm sure law enforcement officers are handsomely paid, their benefits and all of those things. Yes, I do think that, CJ.
Well, I
think there was officers that really enjoyed it and were good at it and created a good relationship with all students. I'm not saying just wait till the catastrophe happens. I'm talking about preventive maintenance for these kids. The police officers in uniform have been demonized for a long time, and it's bad. Because, there's a few bad ones, and hopefully they can weed them out. But I tell you what, there's officers that did a good job. They didn't want to leave the school system.
I know, but CJ, and then Sandy, I'll let you go. But in Akron, Ohio, you just had a man shot 60 times. You talk about demonizing law enforcement. What demonizes law enforcement is that kind of a situation.
Well, let me just try and be the mediator here, because I think CJ and I think your heart's in the right place in what you're talking about. I think there definitely is a need to build a bridge between the community and the police, and vice versa. I think that the police have to lose their fear of the community, and the community have to lose their fear of the police, and it's a two-sided street. And I suspect that having police working much more closely with community in schools and elsewhere is one of the ways to lose that mutual fear of one another. And I think that the patrolman, the officer Trupski kind of a guy that was walking the streets, had a much different relationship with the community.
No question.
Than the guy in the cruiser who only gets out of his car to deal with really troublesome situations that are frightening to him and to the participants. So, I hear you. I see you. I think you're saying some things that are definitely well intended and maybe right. But we need to work on it in more in different ways. And I think we all have to admit that the problem between police and the community is a mutual one that involves a two-sided fear. And that fear is probably misguided on both sides, okay? The community shouldn't be as afraid of police as they are, and the police shouldn't be as afraid of the community as they are, and that mutual fear has created some reality out of the paranoia, because the frightened police shoot people, and people who get shot are afraid of the shooters, and that's what's happened.
Sandy, the new police chief in the city of Milwaukee, Jeffrey Norman, is a lifelong resident of the city. And so he's found that building relationships with law enforcement out in the community at events is the way to go. And so the visibility of law enforcement officers at community events is what he's been big on, and it works.
Yeah, so I think in that respect, CJ and he are in agreement. It's just a question of the strategy, I suppose. How do you deploy that? But clearly, I think people recognize that there is this mutual fear, and the police. I think the only thing that CJ you weren't talking about, but I think you would concede maybe, is that police are afraid of the community in the same respects that community are afraid of the police, and it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. People who are afraid of one another act out against one another in ways that personify the danger. It's kind of like the international affairs I've talked about. When we decide to paint a country as a potential enemy, we treat them differently, and they treat us differently. And so that's happening locally, too.
And I just think that they could be better utilized than sitting in schools, building relationships with kids who are in classrooms. CJ, thank you very much for the call. We got to go to a break. Phone lines are open at 844 967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, I watched the Democratic Senate debate on Sunday. I thought you were probably in front of the TV with popcorn and waiting to see it yourself, weren't you?
I was probably on the 17th hole or something.
But I will tell you something. They've got some good candidates.
Yeah, well, my experience with each of the candidates is that we wouldn't go wrong with any of them.
No. You couldn't. I'll tell you something. Tom Nelson is a brilliant guy, would make a great United States Senator. I was surprised even at Lazary. And I guess he graduated from an Ivy League school.
No, I think Lazary's a super smart guy who's actually involved himself in Milwaukee quite extensively.
Do you know him personally?
With the Bucks, I've met him, but I don't know him personally at all. But my notion, based on the way he's approached things, is that number one, he's been interested in being involved in Wisconsin public affairs ever since he came here. Interested in politics, but he's done it sort of the right way by doing good things and rolling up his sleeves, both in Milwaukee and in Wisconsin. I think he's developed a lot of knowledge and a lot of contacts. So yeah, I think Alex Lazary would be a great senator. As would Tom Nelson. As would Mandela Barnes.
He really did conduct himself well. He knew the subjects. Mandela Barnes did a great job. Sarah Godlewski did a great job. So it's not like any one of those four wouldn't be a formidable foe.
None of them would embarrass the state in the same way that Ron Johnson.
That's, you just took the words out of my mouth.
Yeah.
You know, and so is it regardless or irregardless? Which one is it?
It's regardless.
It's so regardless of which one of them comes out on top. I think in any debate, any one of those four would defeat Ron Johnson in any kind of debate.
Oh, yeah, in any debate. I mean, the issue is which one, or would all of them, would each of them defeat him in an election? And the hope is that that would be the case. I do hope that whoever is the most likely to defeat him is the one who gets the nomination.
Yeah, well, the most likely to defeat him. Wow.
I don't know. I mean, I'm saying we don't know.
I know.
We don't know that now. I think that's what an election campaign is all about.
Well, what we do know is that Mandela Barnes has national cachet from the standpoint that he's had Elizabeth Warren come here on behalf of him and stump for him. He's just had Senator Cory Booker come last week and stump for him. And so it shows me that on a national scale that the Democrats are pushing for Mandela. They haven't, and none of the others have gotten, I think, national prominence. So, and I'm not saying that that makes Mandela a better candidate.
Well, I think the issue will be who gets state cachet and who gets state prominence. And as I said, I simply hope that the person most likely to beat Ron Johnson is the one who ends up accomplishing that in the campaign. Because, the truth about who has the state cachet and the state prominence will be on Wednesday morning after the election.
Sandy, it's we've seen Ron Johnson. And he's clearly worn out his welcome. And the more you watch him, the more you ask, how did he wind up where he was?
How did we elect this person?
Yes.
Yeah, it's the what were we thinking thought.
Because you just, he's going to say the wrong thing, right? I mean, he's always going to say the wrong thing in a flippant manner, as if, do you know who I am? I'm a United States Senator. I'm Ron Johnson. I've been in charge of the position he was in. Very, very powerful position.
Well, actually, he also was the chief liaison to Ukraine. Under Trump, he was set up as being the chief kind of congressional liaison person with Ukraine. So, our relationship with Ukraine has been fraught for quite a while. And and some of that fraughtness, in my mind, comes from the notion that someone like Ron Johnson was playing a fundamental role.
So you then ask this, I'll ask this question, Sandy. Okay, so how does a guy like Ron Johnson get to become a United States Senator?
Ron Johnson was born on third base and thought he hit a triple. And then when he crossed home plate, he thought that he had accomplished that himself, too. I mean, he
married a woman with money.
He married money. He's a white man.
But there are many white men.
I know, but he married money, and then he was able to purloin that money along with, I guess, he obviously had an astuteness associated with exciting a Republican base.
On the
issues that he would talk about. And so,
well, before I even knew who Ron Johnson was, I would hear Mark Belling, Charlie Sykes, and others who were pushing for Ron Johnson. He was running against an established conservative back in the day who owns many of the schools, Hope Christian Academies. I forgot the guy's name who's behind those, but he was a pretty strong conservative, and he decided to run for those offices, and for whatever reason, he must have brought up the ire of the conservative movement, and so they ran Ron Johnson against him. Nobody knew who Ron Johnson was. Talk radio created who Ron Johnson was. He had no political history or any of those kinds of things. So I remember him when he came out of nowhere. But he became stronger and stronger because he wound up with more and more power. And you just, on a national level. And
to some extent, he came out of the woodwork in the same way that Walker did.
Yes.
And I think that the Republican Party went through a period in Wisconsin, maybe it's still in it, where there was kind of a quiet group of people who had a great deal of sway in it, the Bradley Foundation and others.
Right.
Who were kind of kingmakers, and they made Walker a king, and I think they made Ron Johnson a king.
Yeah, they did. They did almost simultaneously. They came up at around the same time. And what I never understood was then when it came to the national level, Ron Johnson wound up with a pretty powerful position on the national level. And I guess all senators at some point in time are going to become heads of some powerful position committees, I mean, right?
Doesn't take a lot of seniority, and there's lots of committees.
Yeah,
and so these people end up, they all end up getting handed, particularly the ones who are from states that are important from the standpoint of being potential marginal states and tough election states. They tend to get handed plums to help their resume, to help them get reelected.
Well, this is a prime example. Because generally, if you are a sitting senator, you're there until,
incumbency,
the Grim Reaper comes.
Yeah, the incumbency is really good for senators, except Wisconsin has been a more fragile Senate seat, both on the Democrat and the Republican side. Russ Feingold got beaten.
Right? Well, but Herb Cole was there for...
Yep.
Until he just... And you can't ever tell me anything Herb Cole ever did. Well, maybe you could, but I couldn't think of anything that Herb Cole.
Well, you can't think about that Tammy Baldwin's done either. So
yeah, that's true.
Senators have trouble. You have trouble figuring out accomplishments. Russ Feingold did. He had the Feingold bill. But, it's hard to list those things.
Yeah. Well, but my thing is, I'm excited that any of those people should be able to, we hope, become the next United States Senator of the state of Wisconsin. And I would say any of them are more than worthy. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
When was the last time that they heard you say, Mother or Father, I love you?
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It is Monday, and that means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And this is not... I'm looking. That's not the guy. Not Lining Cuckoo. I forgot the guy's name. He's not on there. But anyway, one of those guys I do know, and that's my conservative buddy, Steve Finn, right at the top. He was the guy, just the average everyday Joe who ran.
Well, we're talking now. We're trying to resurrect the memory of who ran against Ron Johnson in his first primary to win his nomination.
Yeah. It might have been the second one. I don't know. But anyway, he was a well-known guy. But anyway, Sandy, I'm just watching Rebecca Clefish, who is now on a full-out assault on Michaels. The guy who's, what is this? Why do I want to say Tim Michaels? What is it?
Yeah, that's his name.
Oh, Tim Michaels.
That's why you want to say it.
Yeah. but she really is, he's made some noise, and she's feeling his heat.
Yeah.
And I just, the people who initially were supporting her, I told you, I listen to conservative stuff, and who originally were supporting her until Michaels came into the picture. But I just don't know, Sandy, the more I hear him, you don't hear him other than on his commercials. And so apparently they don't want anybody to get to know who he is until...
Well, he doesn't have any political experience, so I suspect his handlers are wanting him to get some, make sure that he's politically adroit, politically savvy before they release him on his own recognizance kind of thing.
So you mean behind the scenes, they're probably giving him crash courses on things?
Probably.
Is that how that works?
Yeah, I mean, I suspect, and, you know, they're trying to make sure that, you know, it's... You're exposed to a lot of different things when you run out and the press can just ask you questions. You just answer them offhandedly. And you know, unfortunately, politics is such that you've got to be very careful with the words you choose, or you have to just use so many words that none of them are important,
yeah.
Like Donald Trump. Right? If you say anything you think, then everything you think isn't that important.
So, you know, I was watching the debate yesterday, and one thing for sure about politicians, they learn how not to answer the question.
Sure.
Right? I mean, they're really trained to not.
What they're trained to do is to say the things that they
want people to hear.
Well thought out. They've thought them out. They've kind of figured out how they would fit into the poll data they've got. And they know the impressions that they want to leave the listeners with at the end of the debate. So they answer questions, regardless of what the question is, with those kinds of statements.
That's exactly what was going on yesterday. And if you didn't know any better, the answers sound really impressive. And then the commentator said... Well, that's not the question I asked you.
Yeah.
Well, how about, and then when they asked the question the second time, then that time's up. So I mean, they're really, that's what they do, right? They're not going to give you a straight answer for the most part.
That's right. I mean, politics has become a situation in which debates aren't debates. They're simply theater in which questions are asked, and people will then provide the words and the sentences and the paragraphs that they've rehearsed and thought about that they want to make sure they leave the listeners with the impressions about.
You know, Sandy, and then they had, and I didn't know, I thought in debates you couldn't have your A-man corner. I thought you couldn't have people that cheer.
Well,
for who they were.
Well, that has to do with the debate rules. And, you know,
okay.
the national debates, they pretty well police the group and make them promise not to applaud. And so, yeah, they do that. But in the local debates, if they haven't set rules against that, I guess
they didn't set any rules against it. And yeah. So you would hear, you know, someone said, so, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, really? I heard.
So it's even more theater.
Yeah, it's more theater. And so there's only going to be one more. You even just, what it did was gave people an opportunity, from my perspective, to see Lazary under the gun. Tom Nelson, we know, is a polished guy,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to pull any punches. I think he's a great, brilliant guy who would be a great senator. He's got political background. He knows how things work politically. He wouldn't be a novice at it.
Mm-hmm.
Mandela is clearly that's basically all he's done since he was a young man was be involved politically in things. He knows how the political machinery works. And I don't know sometimes, Sandy, if that's a good thing always, that people know how the political machinery works.
Well, I'm not sure that the problem, as an American, I have is that apparently political machinery doesn't work.
I know that's
I mean, political machinery works to get people elected, if that's the machinery you're interested in. But the machinery that's involved with formulating public policy and getting a cohesive and intelligent American policy set both domestically and internationally, in my mind, that machinery doesn't work and hasn't worked.
So the political machinery that we're talking about is why we can't get it's why we can't get anything moving. And maybe and that's why you keep hearing people say bring in business people like Tim Michaels and others who won't get caught up in that. But they can't help but get caught up in that. They can't change that.
Right. Well, the machinery has almost been created in a manner that assures loggerheads. The filibuster rule in the Senate alone is something that creates paralysis. And so in the face of paralysis, maybe what you do is you figure, well, I'm going to control the things I can control. What is that? Me getting reelected.
Yeah. you know, Sandy, it's a little humorous, but accurate.
Yeah.
I mean, a Democrat or a Republican, right?
Yeah. I'm going to work every day. You wake up and you figure, I'm going to do the things where I can have an impact on the future in some manner. And every day they make the same decision, which is reelection.
You know, it frustrates me to no end every time elections come up, right? I don't care which one it is. It's the same thing. I'm going to change this. I'm going to change that. I'm going to change this. I'm going to change. Knowing you don't have any chance whatsoever individually of changing anything, right? I mean, even the President of the United States themselves limited in the things.
Well, and also, in order to accomplish change, the things that you want to change, you'd have to exercise leadership. You'd have to persuade other people in a position to have an impact on that change, to make the changes. You'd have to be willing to get out ahead of maybe public opinion. You'd have to help mold public opinion to be in favor of your change. If you want to get reelected, that isn't what you do, okay? Yeah. When you want to get reelected, you might promise whatever the various audiences want to hear, but you want to make sure that you don't get out ahead of political opinion. You have to stay right in step with current political opinion. So the process of getting reelected locks you into the status quo, and it takes away from you this leadership that is the requirement for getting things accomplished. We've lost leadership in this country.
Can you imagine being a United States Senator, United States Congressperson, and that's your job, right? Traveling the world, Yeah. You know, every now and then.
Having groups stand up and applaud when you walk in the room. Having people come out, bow and curtsy to your office.
Almost similar to being a king or a queen, right?
It really is.
I know. And a almost lifetime position once you get there.
Right.
People don't retire for the most part. They die in office, right? Oh, we got to get out of here. Okay. All right. Thank everybody who made the show go. Thank you, Sandy. I'll be back on tomorrow. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later.